Welcome to In the Moment. I'm continue our month-long coverage of pre-K in South Dakota. Mary Bowne joins us to share another perspective in the pre-K discussion and to discuss what she sees as being important to this conversation. Mary Bowne is professor at South Dakota State University who specializes in early childhood education and human development. Mary, thank you for being here. Welcome.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
And she's joining us from the Janine Basinger Studio at South Dakota State University. And with us here in the Kirby Family Studio, we have Dr. Carolyn Kippis. She's with Sanford Children's and works with developmental and behavioral pediatrics as well. Dr. Kippis, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Mary, I want to start with you and tell me a little bit about your work and your specialty with your expertise and educational background, if you would, please. Let's set the stage.
Absolutely. So I obtained my bachelor's and master's degree from South Dakota State in human development and early childhood, and then my educational doctorate in curriculum and instruction from USD. I've worked many hours observing children in the pre-K setting. We have a laboratory school here at South Dakota State University campus where we have children enrolled who are toddlers all the way through kindergarten. And so there's daily observations that I can make and interactions that I can make with the children and families as well. And then my research stems back to my observations as well as other studies that I've been completing.
And Dr. Kippis, tell us a little bit about your work with Sanford.
So I'm a developmental behavioral pediatrician, and what I usually explain to parents is we're kind of a rare breed of doc. There's not a lot of us around, but what it means is I'm a general pediatrician with extra training in child development and behavior. So in our clinic, we work with kids who have some variation in their developmental process, what language delays, motor delays, or behavioral problems.
All right. So what we're trying to get at this month is we have these ongoing conversations about early learning and preschool and basically little kids and how they think and how they learn. Mary, when we're talking about pre-K education, we're talking about early learning. How do you define that? What we're finding is as people come in, they have different ideas of what this is. We've heard everything from socialization to indoctrination to they had to learn how to stand in line to it's more important to stay home and play. So how do you frame this conversation?
Absolutely. So typically pre-K is a classroom-based preschool program for children under the age of 5 years. It's usually a program that develops social-emotional skills, academic skills, and exposes children to an educational environment using a play-based curriculum. And that's what's so important is the play. What research has shown time and time again that children need to play. And this type of play isn't with technological devices. It's with human contact and with real materials in hand. We all learn in different ways. Some learn with visuals, some learn by listening. But within a pre-kindergarten classroom, you're going to see all of that taking place, primarily with hands-on activities for these children. And you're going to see structured components to the day, and you're going to see unstructured components. So it's structured being group times and small group activities. Unstructured time is free play, and that free play is their planned activities based on the children's individual goals as well as the classroom needs and individual needs. But within that time period, children are allowed to go do what they want to do within the classroom, and ultimately what that's helping them build is their confidence, self-expression, the creativity, communication, logical thinking, and problem solving, and the list goes on.
And Dr. Kippis, another thing that we keep hearing is that gets into this idea of brain development and child development and socialization in some, from some perspectives, and really about identifying problems. And some people are saying, well, we really need to identify any kind of developmental delays and problems early so we can address them. And other people saying, yeah, if you identify too early, we put kids into these boxes and labels, and then they're just going to catch up, by third grade. They're going to catch up by first grade. They might just be being four, and they might pick up a label in a pre-K environment that they wouldn't have if they hadn't been there. Help us put that into perspective.
Right, and it's hard because I think families come to us with some of those preconceived notions. I don't want my kid to be labeled. I don't want to, and I guess from sitting on the side of the desk that we do in the clinic, that we want to identify differences that are significant enough that are getting in that child's way, because then we want to implement interventions that will help them narrow that gap, catch up, and do it faster, And could some of these mild delays maybe just, would the kids potentially just catch up on their own? Or is there, sure, but what if we catch them up faster and then we get them right on pace with their peers right away, and then we're not waiting around for it to happen? So I think early intervention is shown time and time again to be the best approach to developmental differences for kids.
What do we know today in your field how fast is our knowledge about really child development in this time frame changing? We're learning a lot pretty quickly, or is this stuff that we've known for a long time, the importance between, birth and 6 years old?
It's changing pretty quickly. I think it's in the last few decades that people have really gotten a better understanding of what's going on for kids learning. I think, there's research going back into the 50s and 60s where we're just starting to figure out that these aren't just, babies aren't just fleshy little blobs that are cute and eaten and make messy diapers. They're actually learning, and they're actually interacting with their people and their environment and learning. And actually all that learning that's happening even, right after birth is all foundation for the learning that they do when they're a preschooler or when they're in kindergarten or beyond that. So that brain development and that brain learning happens so early. And I think we're just now grasping that and now having to figure out how do we get everybody else on board and realizing that we need to be paying attention to this.
Mary, really the same question, only from your perspective. How much do we know about, we hear time and time again somebody saying, when I was in kindergarten, I learned how to cut with scissors, and that was the big deal. And now these kids are being, they're capable of so much more, but they're being asked of so much more. We've learned a lot. Mary, how quickly has our idea of what early childhood learning and education should look like, how rapid is that developing?
Well, the amount of studies that are being done right now and have been done in the past have shown time and time again the importance of pre-kindergarten. And yes, we want to challenge children, but we don't want to make them to a point where they become bored or they don't want to be in the classroom necessarily anymore. We want to challenge them to their individual level. And brain development, like she had mentioned, there's more and more research being done on it, but the amount of brain development that's taken place in those early years is crucial. And it's not trying to force this information to the children, it's allowing them to explore, allowing them to experiment with their surroundings and having them ask questions and helping them gain those answers to those questions that they might have. In regards to studies that, have been done, I mean, even back in the 70s, they've done longitudinal studies, so preschool children who've been tracked until adulthood and into their adulthood, and they're showing children who were in quality child care programs have 28% were less likely to develop alcohol and drug problems or end up in jail. And they're 24% more likely to attend college, have higher incomes in adulthood. They have better math and reading and writing skills, less likely to become teen parents, marijuana users, cigarette smokers. And like I said, this isn't just one study. These are multiple studies that are being done to show the importance of those early learning years.
Mary, is South Dakota progressive in early learning, regressive? What sort of words do you describe where we're at compared to pre-K kids in other states?
At this point, I'd say we're definitely behind. I know there's been mention about the fact that there's plenty of pre-K programs with church offerings, and as long as there's supportive parents out there. The issue is that what do you constitute as quality? South Dakota has no requirements or regulations for preschools unless the preschool is used as a substitute for parental care. So someone can claim them to be themselves a preschool, but ultimately what's taken place within that location. 43 states provide publicly funded preschool programming serving over 1.3 million children, but South Dakota is not one of those 43 states. And I understand, our state education and social services administration, they've got so much on their plates already. It's so hard to find time and effort to be putting into into these components and having the support as well. It's not because we don't care, it's because we don't have necessarily the support that we need. Another example, too, is that there was a preschool development grant that was given by the Department of Education recently, and 46 states received monies ranging from $500,000 to billions of dollars for each state, but South Dakota didn't apply. And it, again, it's not because we don't care, it's just because we don't have necessarily the support to be able to apply for those things.
Dr. Kippis, you work with parents, right? Because mm-hmm. you work with kids. And what are they looking for? What sort of, and I want to get, what I'm going to get at eventually here is sort of the value of teachers and what Mary is doing in the lab there and what preschool teachers, qualified teachers, early learning educators are capable of doing for parents who have kids, you know, birth to three or five. What sort of developmental issues are you looking for that you would come to your pediatrician and say, I'm concerned about this, I'm concerned about this?
Sure. You know, my child isn't, you know, I'm observing my child with other kids the same age and they're not talking as much as other children, or they're later to walking, or gosh, you know what, my kid, when they are upset so much more, they're really having a hard time calming themselves or being able to get over an upset, where I watch other kids being able to settle themselves down. So those are some of the, you know, the development, you know, kind of classical developmental things that we look at, and then also the social emotional development. And that's where you get trained, people who are trained in early childhood education, they're knowledgeable. They know how to do that to watch for those milestones for kids.
All right. And what are some of those interventions? When do you tell a parent to sort of be concerned? When do you tell them to sit back and kind of wait this one out? Mm-hmm. And if they are concerned, what resources do parents have to take a step to help this kiddo out?
That's a great question. So, you know, their primary care clinician has the ability to, you know, there's wonderful tools that are used for screening for developmental milestones, but also social emotional development. And a lot of the pediatricians and family medicine clinicians have this available in their office. So they can do those kinds of screenings, and that can help sort of weed out who's a kid that maybe needs additional referral. If there is additional need, then you can look at your local school district birth to three services if the child's under the age of three, or early childhood special education programming after the age of three.
Mary, let's talk about teachers, educators, and tell me a little bit more about the lab school that you have there at SDSU.
Sure. So our lab school, as I mentioned earlier, has different classrooms with observation booths. And in those classrooms, we have children from 15 months all the way through kindergarten. Within the lab school, there's research that's being done on the children, as well as the families that are present there. And it's something that's offered to the community on a tuition-based. We're one of the four, I believe, centers in South Dakota that's accredited by NAEYC, which is the highest quality possible for early childhood or child care programs, in the state. So we try and make sure that when we have our students in the classrooms that are wanting to become early childhood teachers, they're seeing top quality. So they know when they get out into their own classrooms, different things that they might want to try or attempt with their children, and how to help them as well as the families.
Tell me a little more about the research, because that has to be an interesting environment to conduct research in for a variety of reasons.
Yes. And the nice thing is that since we are located on campus, we have other programs that utilize our lab school, primarily because if they're completing research with children, here's a great way where children are on campus and they're able to come in and observe those children without being in an interference in the classroom whatsoever for these children.
Dr. Kippis, tell me a success story, because for parents who face a child with some kind of health issue or developmental delay, there is a lot of fear mm-hmm. that comes up, and sometimes that fear can lead to denial, and denial can lead to inaction, maybe unintentionally because a parent doesn't have time or awareness or you know, financial resources, but also sometimes you might have all of that and you might hesitate because you know, you're nervous. You don't want this to be your story. You don't want this developmental, you don't want to hear the word autism. You don't want to hear something. But tell me what's on the other side of some of the hard work and tough conversations.
Right. I think, a quick success story would be, you know, recently I saw a little girl back. I had seen her about 6 to 9 months ago, and she wasn't really saying many words. And actually, they were worried about autism. But when I evaluated her, she did not fit a diagnosis of an autism spectrum disorder, but she actually had a language delay. And we were able to get her connected with their local Birth to Three services. And it was amazing the amount of progress that she made in 6 to 9 months' time. And really, it was just about, you know, kind of figuring out where was she struggling with her language and getting those interventions. And all of a sudden, she's not completely caught up, but boy, she made a huge gains, and the family was just so relieved to have that kind of a success story. We fortunately, in the work that I do, there's lots of successes. Sometimes it just depends how big of a success you're going to measure. Sometimes it's small things, like we've got a kid who's now calling their mom, you know, mom or dad, giving them a name. So they're actually getting to hear that from their kid's voice. We've made it into kindergarten, and we're not needing a lot of extra help. So again, it's when we catch it early, we're able to make these little victories, and sometimes they accumulate into really big leaps. We might have really a lot of grief and sometimes sadness at the time that we're having that initial tough conversation about what the diagnosis is. But ideally, down the road, we're having these wonderful conversations about, remember how worried we were about Johnny, that would we ever talk? And now we wish he would stop talking for a little bit, you know, right. Kind of stuff. So,
Mary, as we look at the conversation from a political standpoint, I'm not asking you to get political, but if there was an appetite in Pierre to sort of move forward into an early learning council, into funding preschool education from a state, how much ground do we have to make up?
Well, that's a great question. I'm kind of limited in regards to what I can say, but we are behind by milestones in regards to other states. And so it really, at this point, it's going to take all of us. It takes a community, as that African proverb says, you know, it takes a community or village to build a child. We need to be those advocates for those children. We need to be the ones who are out there speaking out for them and helping them. Research doesn't lie. It tells us what's happening when children are enrolled in quality pre-K programs. And in order to get the ball rolling, we need such things as like an advisory board to get going and getting started in regards to what we can potentially do for this state and for the children in our state. Mm.
Carolyn Kippis is a child development and behavioral pediatrician with Samford, and Mary Bowne is a professor at South Dakota State University specializing in early childhood education and human development. This is all part of our month-long conversation on pre-K in South Dakota. If you have an idea, if you have an experience with preschool that you'd like to talk to us about, send us an email inthemoment@sdpb.org. Carolyn, thank you for being here. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Mary, thank you as well.
Thank you.